Yeah. Five killers arise from graves. The within, they shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, they clear space and time and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Experience Grind podcast, the show about getting older and the experiences we have gained along the way through movies, TV, games, music, all that pop culture goodness. My name is Brian, but you can call me Brian. And this week I will be hosting along with my good pals who are usually here with me. He tastes like burger, so I don't like him anymore. It's Kyle.
Oh, snap. I've been through that many times. I've been a summer camper a lot of times. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. He has something at 11, so he can't change it because he's already moved it twice. It's Sean.
Hey, you may have already done it, but I'm just going to still commit to it. Hey, guys, you can call me Sean. I'm hot. I'm moist. Wait, wrong one. Hey, guys.
All right, we'll go with Sean, I guess. Thank you. And he's going to go fondle his sweaters. I mean, fondue the cheddar. It's Ryan.
Oh my God, I was literally, this was the one I was locked into. This is so good. I was absolutely going to make a fondle my sweaters joke. I was going to ramble and they say, all right, we go fondle my sweaters real quick. Dude, I'm happy to be here. Happy you chose this one.
Yeah, we're talking about Wet Hot American Summer, directed by David Wayne, written by David Wayne and Michael Showalter, starring Michael Showalter amongst a whole lot of other people.
Everybody.
Everybody's in this.
Before
I
forget,
debut of Bradley Cooper.
There was a point in this movie where what's his name, Showalter, Michael Showalter.
Yeah,
he's the one that played the old guy in costume at the talent show at the end. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, when I saw that, I immediately thought to myself, he's playing two roles. I bet you he either wrote or directed this movie.
Yeah.
That's usually a good bet to make. I'll tell
him, David Wayne and Michael Ian Black, the guy that's gay with Bradley Cooper, are like best friends. They have written and done tons of projects together. They had a Comedy Central show for a while.
The Stella. State.
But yeah.
Stella.
Stella. They're like the state. A comedy writing trio. They've done so much together, and like all these people are just their friends from all of that shit. Sorry, I'm explaining Brian's episode. I'm gonna shut the fuck up.
Go right ahead.
Yeah,
I thought this would be a fun one, a little nostalgia for the summertime because we are in the thick of the summer.
Oh yeah,
and I don't know, did you boys do summer camp?
100%.
Really? How many times did you do summer camp?
I'm jealous. Like every summer for a while, because it was church camp, so it was sponsored through the church, and so they like paid for part of it, and so it was also a way to get me out of the house for a week, so my mom could have a break. So I went quite a few times. I mean, up until I was probably like 11 or 12, and then I was like, this shit sucks. I'm never going here again. And I didn't.
That's fair.
Until I
and
went
here you are 30
once.
Years later, looking back.
I did go back and I was a counselor there. And I famously broke my foot on a slip and slide.
Oh.
What?
Is this a true story?
100% true story, yeah.
Ryan, famously, he broke his foot. Famous.
I thought it was pretty famous. I feel like I've told that story a couple times, too. But yeah, I was a counselor there. It was like the first real day they had this crazy, when I say slip and slide, like it was like this custom built like plastic tubing, like carved into like this super long hill.
Oh,
and
wow.
We'd been going down it like all day and you get to the bottom and it like had this little bump that they built in and then it like dumped you into this pool with like knee high water. And literally like the last one, we're all like, all right, we got to go eat, whatever. We go down it. And I land on like my toes and my foot bends that way and I break six bones in the top of my foot.
Ah. Oh.
And like I thought I broke my fucking leg because like when it like shattered, it like vibrated all the way up to my knee and I was like, ah, I was laying on my back like feeling my leg and I was like, oh, cool, I didn't break anything. And I stood up and I was like, ah, I fell back down again because my foot was broken. Yeah. Fuck. Summer camp, guys. It's
so not quite the same counselor experience that these guys had in this movie.
I think more like the kids, I feel, especially the ones under Andy's watch.
Ryan, fair. You know where I grew up. I didn't go to summer camp because, okay, we're just surrounded by summer camps around here. But it's where rich people send their kids to go for the summer. So it's the like $40,000 a year to Jesus go to summer Christ. Camp. It's like ridiculous. But camp counselor season is a thing. That is a thing. There's theater season and there's camp counselor season, and they overlap. The Berkshires are a horny county.
Sure. When you're a camp counselor, it's...
It's a different kind of counselors of
Berkshire
American
County
summer.
Coming soon. All right, to
I was
going to
say, you can't, you don't want to be Jared from Subway.
Oh, well, no, the camp counselors. What?
Where did that come from? What?
No.
Where? Dr. Doom made an appearance. Cut. Jared Fogle just popped out of nowhere. What?
Right. Simmer down, Molly Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, reminder that the counselors in this movie are supposed to be around 16 years old for the most part.
Brilliant stuff.
Oh, Molly Shannon, though.
Molly Shannon is not.
And divorced.
Yeah. Well, she actually says in the movie that she's 38, like 10. But... yeah, I
Ryan,
did a day camp, but I didn't actually do like a sleepaway camp situation. We would get bused down to like the campground every day and hang out with all the people who were sleeping there.
I definitely had the camp romance thing that lasts for like a week.
Oh,
okay.
Nice. Write each other like twice and then
it fizzles out into nothing.
Yeah.
That was all happening.
I'll never forget the times we had at camp.
We'll never forget these times. We're binded forever. We're camp counselors.
Closest thing we had to that was going to Maine. And there was that romance thing, but not quite. You would go up to Maine and there would always be some cute girl there. And you'd be like, oh, and like nothing would happen. And then like 2 months later, you find out that Mitch got with her. It's like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right, actually. Yeah. That sounds like Maine. all right. Well, I have a little synopsis I wrote up here.
Oh, good. Okay.
Very short, but very difficult to maneuver because there's a lot of moving parts in this one, even though there's not a whole lot of plot, but we'll get there.
There's like five storylines.
Yeah. So it's the last day at Camp Firewood, 1981, and hormones, hijinks, and horrible decision-making are all on the menu. Counselor Coop pines after Katie, who's dating Andy, the hottest piece of human garbage this side of Waterville, Maine. Beth, the camp director, flirts with astrophysicist Henry, who eventually warms up to her and the nerd kids just in time to discover that Skylab is about to crash into the talent show. No big deal, just deadly space debris and puberty colliding. Jean, the camp cook, is clearly dealing with some stuff. Luckily, a talking can of vegetables helps him out. Fetishes and all, and a glorious monologue that somehow ends in cheers again instead of lawsuits. Victor the Virgin tries to drift. Victor the Virgin tries to ditch a rafting trip to get laid, crashes a van, and runs through the woods only to get dumped by the very girl he ditched the kids for. Neil, MVP of the day, saves both the children and Victor's dignity, but barely. Ben and McKinley get married by the lake. Gail works through her ex-husband trauma with the help of children. And a stage-shy weirdo named Steve causes an indoor thunderstorm with the sheer power of theater. The talent show goes on, the Skylab debris lands harmlessly thanks to science and friendship, and the next morning everyone hooks up with whoever they want, except Coop, who gets dumped again. Life lessons, space junk can be redirected, but hot dumb boys will always win, for now.
I kind of wish that the Skylab fell on somebody, and this entire thing was a premonition to the start of a Final Destination movie.
I would have been okay with the Skylab falling on Andy.
No, you need that hot dumb meat alive as long as possible.
I'm pretty sure he killed two kids.
I said hot dumb meat. Yes, I said what I said.
I said what
you
I said.
Hottest piece of garbage. Did you mean like he's hot garbage or he's like he's hot?
He's garbage. Hot garbage.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, come mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. You saw mm-hmm. Paul Rudd mm-hmm. in this.
Come on. This is Paul Rudd at age blank.
Does it matter?
No, it doesn't at all.
No. But boy, man, everybody, even the ageless, look young in this movie.
Yeah.
Holy moly. 2001. All of these, like Bradley Cooper, what a baby face, man.
Pretty crazy how young everybody looks in this. It's even Christopher Maloney. You're like, oh, God.
Yeah. I was trying to do mental math of like, was he SVUing because he's needed at this camp right now?
I guess it's crazy that he does this and then also crushes it in SVU, like just so hard.
The man has range.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Happy
on
FX? Yet.
No, but I've seen the advertisements for it.
Yeah, he has like a crazy CGI donkey that follows him around because he's an insane person.
Okay.
It's more in line with this character than it is any of the Law and Order stuff.
I'm a big fan of Gene.
Gene's excellent.
Maloney's Gene. Big fan.
Yeah.
I could do a series of just him.
Blown away to learn that the vegetables was also voiced by Bob Belcher, Mr. Yeah. H. John Benjamin.
Archer
too.
Man of many voices. Well, one voice, but many roles.
But goddamn, it's a great one.
It's like Warburton.
Well, I mean, did you not know that prior? Go through the list, right?
I did, yeah. I said you didn't, it seemed.
I didn't. I had no idea.
Well, yeah, but you've never seen this movie.
Yeah, it makes sense. Janine Garofalo, David Hyde Pierce, Molly Shannon, Paul Rudd, Christopher Maloney, Michael Showalter, Marguerite Moreau, Ken Marino, Michael Ian Black. I mean, Amy Poehler, Bradley Cooper, Elizabeth Banks, Joe Latrullio, Judah Friedlander, H. John Benjamin. This is a stacked cast. Why don't we talk about characters?
Yeah. Ryan shot his wad early last night when we were watching this together because he's like, Ken Marino is the best one in this movie. And then he's like, wait, I immediately regret that.
I love Ken Marino. Ken Marino does not get enough credit. He has some of the best gags in any... anything he's in, he usually gets like one of the best gags. And I think there are many points in this one where he gets it. But if we are speaking characters, and since Kyle put it on me first, thank you.
Puppet Master.
The Puppet Master. I think this is a great cast. It's some of these people were here before they really blew up and got big. But even before that, at this point, it's a great group of unknown comedic actors. Or not unknown, I'll say underrated more so at the time. This famously got overshadowed by Broken Lizard's Super Troopers. And those are complete unknown. So that kind of shows you how kind of niche this was at the time and these people were. But I think... they come together to make something that has still stood the test of time. It in its stupid simplicity, I think it is still funny because it doesn't linger on anything of the era it was in too much. It doesn't reference. It doesn't bring in anything. It is just this weird time capsule of, I guess, 80s homage stupidity. I love the characters. I think everybody here brings something very unique and very different. This is a perfect one. 5 out of 5.
All right. Let's hear from Sean. This is your first time, so.
This is my first time. I'm going to do something a little different. I want to ask each one of you who your favorite character in this movie was. Starting with you, Brian with a B. You're not the only one that gets to call out people.
Deadpool and Nice Pool.
It's hard to say, but I think my favorite is Gene.
Okay. What about you, Kyle?
Easily Andy. And then just to give, because I thought he'd be the number one, I also really love Neil. Neil's a very close second.
And what about you, Ryan?
Also Andy, but I also figured somebody else would go Andy, so I will go with Gail von Kleinenstein.
Jesus Christ, Molly Shannon is unhinged in this fucking thing, which is saying a lot for her.
There was various different points through this movie where, like, if you asked me at four different points through this movie, I probably would have given you four different answers. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, I'm going to be right there with you, Brian. Like, the whole him doing the montage with Coop.
Yeah.
Dude, that set me off. Like, I lost my shit. It was so funny. I think the casting in this, Ryan, you put it so well. It's a bunch of people who I don't even know if you can really place a lot of them earlier. Molly Shannon, definitely. Paul Rudd, for sure. I guess a lot of them. But to be able to gather them all into this one place, and it seems as though perhaps some of them forged some sort of movie relationships, Paul Rudd in specific, because there's a couple of people that pop up in future films of his, it was really cool to see them together so early. I'm just going to say five. I thought the casting was awesome in this. And the characters all bring something different, are funny in their own ways, have their own motivations and whatnot, even though they're all relatively the same, but yeah.
Five. Yeah. Five. Kyle.
Also five out of the gate. At the risk of saying one of the cheesier things on this show, I guess. Man, how much fucking fun do you think these guys are having every day? Like, just all these fucking people hanging out, riffing, just coming up with. I think that's why we get so many stupid things, dude. Like, there's one part where they get back from going into town and Coop's talking to Marguerite, and then he runs away, and like the other three people in the truck had just walked up and stood with their faces next to a barn, and he just runs up and there's it again, like they were just like, hey, let's do this will be funny, and they're like, yeah, fuck it, because we're these guys. I don't know, everything's great, everybody. The characters are stereotyped and overacted and supposed to be. The whole thing is like a meta on meta self joke about so many different subgenres, and in that regard everybody crushes it too. And Ken Marino has one of the funniest bits when he's driving, singing along, and screams and crashes into the tree. That's just hilarious. So.
Just casually singing, and yeah. Oh shit, and it just cuts to him crashing. It's so good.
It's crazy how much like Michael Showalter, like you hate and also feel bad for, and also cheer for Coop at all points of the movie. Like you don't think you would do all that in a stupid fucking comedy, but they pull some things. So five, man.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. It's a five for me on characters. These guys are all strangely well-developed and have these, I mean, minuscule little arcs, but they do have arcs. Even, like, some of the female characters are played a little, what's the word?
Broad?
80s.
80s. Oh. 80s. Yeah, they're played very 80s, very one-track. Mm-hmm. But in a way that is very tongue-in-cheek, like, and making too, fun that of that. I love Elizabeth Banks in this movie with the mm-hmm. barbecue sauce on her mm-hmm. face. Just, I love it. Love it. And five for me on the characters. They're,
you taste they're like meat.
So much fun.
You taste like barbecue sauce.
Our next
I don't like you anymore.
Dory, you taste like burger. I don't like you anymore.
That's what it was.
Oh, my God.
Just ran in my journal. Story is next. Why don't we start off with Kyle this time?
I alluded to earlier, there's like five different storylines all happening in this, which is kind of indicative of the camp movie. If you've ever seen like a Meatballs or Ernest Saves Camp, there's like all these different sub-stories with like some of the little campers. I love the narrator is the stinky kid that just is pretending to talk into a radio that's not plugged in.
I love that reveal.
That's fucking hilarious. I love the way that everything is delivered. It's base. And we've gone over this a couple times before with some of these comedies where like the storylines themselves are real generic because the funny stuff is like, of course, how those things are playing out. This whole Coop situation, like the will they, won't they, and then Beth is like, no, I'm going to go fuck Andy, because, I mean, he's hot. Look at you. And that's just, that's real, man.
I know objectively that you are the better guy, but I'm 16 and all I want is one thing, sex, and not sex with you.
It's so fucking brutally mean, it's, man.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. This was one of those movies that was like a real sleeper hit. I heard about it through other friends, and then it's one of those that like I saw, and it just sticks with you. I love everybody gets a little time to shine here. I love Joe Trujillo. I love not Joe Trujillo, the stuntman that's just obviously him every time it's the motorcycle doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just those little things that like I'm trying to not get too deep into until we get into style and direction, because I think it's great. I think I went over this last time either. I don't think I can give it a perfect because the story doesn't matter. I'm going to give it a four and a happy four. I'll classify it there. So.
Okay. All right. Sean?
I am so conflicted on this. It's so hard going into this movie for the first time and not looking into it at all. I've never seen a trailer for this. I've never seen a video clip from it, period. I had no idea that this movie was a parody. So, like, believe me, my surprise when it gets to the point where you're like, wait, what the fuck is going on right now? I don't know if it's when he like T-boned sideways into a tree or the motorcycle scene that you're talking about, but like I'm sitting there for the first like 20, 25 minutes of the movie being like, wow, this is very enjoyable. I love movies set in the 80s, this kind of thing. Like this has got all of the ingredients for something for me to like, and then it just goes unabashedly off the hinges. But there's something so... I'll get back to this in style and direction. Kyle makes a lot of good points. You know, the story's there. There's motivation. There's the writing's funny. And although it may be crazy, a lot of times it's just very pointedly true. It's just something you wouldn't typically say. Mm-hmm. So I'll give it like a strong three.
All right.
And that's just because I'm really conflicted.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I'll go next. I'm with you on the three, actually. I really enjoy this movie. I think the characters are very well developed, but the story is just not really there. There's not a whole lot of the story happening. Like, you get the whole thing with the piece of the space station, and it doesn't come in until, like, three quarters of the way into the movie they start with that plot. There's a lot of stuff happening, but not happening at all. And I've always kind of had a bit of an issue with these like slice of life kind of films. Like Dazed and Confused, I did not like. I've never enjoyed that film. I know. I'm sorry, Ryan. I want a story that I can follow the whole way through. And I was watching this going like, why do I remember liking this movie so much? And then like eventually it caught back up to me. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's just a lot of fun. But the story itself is barely there. So it's a three for me. And that brings us to Ryan.
So you all are being very generous by giving the story 3 and 4 because there's barely a story. That said, our story... category typically includes the dialogue and the writing. I think the script is part of it,
right?
And mm-hmm. for that, I do think I'm gonna be right up there with Kyle. Surprise, surprise, I'm gonna give it an enthusiastic 4 for the script and the dialogue, which I think is very smart and subversive and has stood again kind of the test of time. There is some problematic things happening early on and puts you on the edge like, oh shit, this is another one that doesn't stand the test. And then like they play in it with the fucking smartest way possible in a great reveal that is just so well handled. And like has, again, this is now 2.5 decades old, which is wow. But it is 25 years, and that a lot of the material stands up really well. It's still funny on like multiple viewings. I'm yeah, enthusiastic for.
We're talking about Chase really Daniels, right?
Yeah.
You want to feel really old? It's 2.5 decades old, set 2 decades prior to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should watch the prequel show sometime after this show.
Yeah. It's so good.
I love both of them.
Because it's set on the first day of camp, but they shot it 20 years later where they look even older and grosser than they did at the end of camp. So
That's amazing.
It's so fucking funny, man.
It's from like 2015. And
yeah it's on Netflix.
They got almost everybody back.
And it's a series.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's really, really, really good.
They do a good job of expanding the lore. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys watch the 10 years later?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thing?
There's also the 10 years later. I also enjoyed
that one.
Which it's also a post credits bit at the end of this movie, if you stick around.
God damn it.
Mm-hmm. They show up.
I forgot to.
Yeah, they do a 10 years later, and the bigger guy with like the long hair, what's his name? Zach. JJ.
JJ.
Yeah. He shows up at 9:30 and they reference the bit back. They're like, we all said 9. And it's literally like that. It's like, not, I don't think it's 45 seconds long of a bit. It's just him walking in and they're like, hey, we said 9.
It's good.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's amazing. That kind of movie.
Yeah. Next up is style. I think we're going to lead off with Ryan this time.
It's a 5. I think they perfectly handle everything. For the parodying they do of the specific genre and the specific era, I think they do a good job. I think, again, the humor is on point. And, you know, it takes real style on your DVD to include a fart commentary track, which I don't think we talk about enough.
Oh my
but
God.
There's a commentary track, which is just good. A bunch of looping fart noises for the whole movie.
They add in 100 random farts into the movie.
That is so crazy. And it's crazy. Just
like that kind of stupid commitment to bit, even if it is so fucking dumb. I goddamn, I admire that. The style's absolutely a 5, and an enthusiastic 5 at that.
Yeah. I'll go next. Same 5. There are so many bits in this that are just like anytime somebody throws something, you hear the glass shatter.
The same so pop break good. Sound the effect. The same
pop break. Yeah.
Uh huh.
It's so good. I just the choices they make with this and the they do such a good job of parodying like multiple genres at once, and still tell a story to a certain extent. And the music is fantastic. They all around, they're crushing it here. So yeah, it's a 5 from me too. And Kyle.
I feel like that fucking one show, America's Got Talent with the gold buzzer. Cause I'm bonus pointing again, boys. I'm going 6, fellas. I think this thing fucking nails the shit out of everything it's trying to. Like, they commit to every bit so hard, and they achieve it perfectly. There's a point where, for no reason, Joe Lotrohilo and fucking Janine Garofalo are just manic, screaming through a fucking hospital looking for a telephone. It's insane. The drastic changes in every style and tone that this movie jumps through and successfully pulls off. It is fantastic. I wanted to give it here instead of director just because I feel there's so much more in everybody's performance too that just brings the style to that level of just... it's so hard to see. And this is also one of those movies that like... There's no people that like Wet Hot American Summer. You love this movie or you fucking hate this movie. Like, it is a very specific style and brand of comedy that if you are into it, which a lot of it specifically, like the Coop storyline shit, is so cringe, like humor, like Scott's Tots Office episode style shit, where it's just like almost painful to watch some of this. It's, like,
yo, that scene when he goes in and confronts Andy and his Confederate flag. It's like, hey, can we talk for a second? Yeah. All right.
I didn't think anything was nearly
that whole scene, though.
That was a second.
Tots, though, here. It never gets that bad.
There's some heartbreaking shit with him there. And then, like, the fucking him doing the comedian bit, like, the awful stand-up comedy that is, like, I love that shit, too. I love Paul Rudd, like, throwing the plate and then, like, having to pick it up and acting just like the biggest child.
Maybe my favorite bit in the whole movie.
Everything is fucking perfect. Dude.
It was hilarious.
All right. When at the end, when Gene and the fucking can, he's like talking to him, and then the can just gives a nod. Perfect. Perfect shit. Yeah, six. Hands down. Nailed every bit of this.
I can suck my own dick, and I do it often.
What a 2001 thing to say.
Right? Oh, all right, Sean, style.
Okay, hold on. Question. This fabled bonus point that I've never given to anything, is it only allowed for one person to give a bonus point a week?
No, I thought you could give it to one. I thought one category.
Yeah.
If you want.
What? Oh, what's the name of
each
our
person give it to one
show that's going to happen? The Grindies? Because there's definitely going to be a category about who has used the most bonus points. Kyle, you're getting the award.
I have not yet.
I think you're the only one.
I will say this. Like, spoilers, I am going to be giving one this episode. And I am having such a hard... I have been having such a hard time trying to figure out where. Because there is so much overlap between the writing. Because I think the writing is fantastic in this. And the style and tone. And the direction. So I'm sure you guys can figure out where it's going to go from here. Dude, this movie kicks off with Jane. And... just absolutely rocking into Jane, kicked so much ass, and then ends with Garofalo and David Hyde Pierce being like, we've been trying for so long. And like this overnight pregnancy. Like, oh my God, that had me dying. The tone in this movie, once you like realize that it's a parody, like, it's so fucking good. I could watch an entire hour-long YouTube video of kids just getting yeeted out of the side of vans. Jesus Christ, dude. Or kids just getting hurt because Paul Rudd's making face with somebody. This is a five for me. This really ticked every box from music to style, the tone. The just like dabbling in all of these different genres and styles of humor, it really kicked a lot of ass in this category for me.
Another factor in my bonus point is I'm a sucker for like the 80s style genre in general. So
yeah. Yep. All right. Next category is entertainment value. And I'm going to kick this one off. Endlessly entertained. And that is in spite of me really being annoyed by the lack of story. Still having such a good time. There's a bit in this movie where a rival team shows up for a baseball game and they just decide, actually, that's kind of trite. It's been done so often. The guy goes and talks to their coach and he's like, yeah, you're right. And then they just leave. And that's the whole scene. I love it so much. It's such a great commentary on like, oh yeah, well, you know, there's going to be we're going to be down the whole game. We're going to have a last minute trick play that puts us in the lead and we're going to win the game. It's going to be great. And they're like, actually, it's been done. How about we don't?
Love pivot.
It's so good. And I could watch it over and over again. Unfortunately, part of this category is also its impact.
Womp womp.
And it's box office. And in the box office, this movie never got a wide release. It did not do well critically, so they never gave it a very wide release. It was at Sundance and apparently was
Nobody
not well received. It had a hard time getting picked up. And then, so this movie only made something like $295,000 on a $1.8 million budget. Yeah. And there are Lots of places are calling it a $5 million budget, but that is because they were lying about the budget to make it seem like a better investment during Sundance. They're like, yeah, it's $5 million. And still nobody was like, no, we're good. I think we're just going to let that one go. And so as much as I love it, I'm gonna stick to the entertainment value subcategories here and only give it a 4.
Hmm.
Okay.
Hmm.
Harsh, brutal, and fair.
But mostly sexy.
Next up, so wet and hot. And American. Kyle.
Yeah. I mean, I'm taking into account what you've said.
And disregarding it. 5 out of 5.
Still.
Almost, yeah. If it wasn't for style getting the bonus point, honestly, this one would. Because like you said, literally every fucking joke in this is great. When they go into town for an hour and get addicted to drugs to the point they're in a fucking... they just... The way that they just... Again, the commitments to the bit. The fucking graphic... gay sex scene pre Brokeback Mountain. I forgot. Yeah. Like there's a lot happening in that scene. I was like, do they went for it?
And in a movie where they're parodying these 80s films that have the gratuitous nudity and sex, the only sex scene in the movie is a gay sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Cooper's debut.
Yeah.
That's a fun little trivia
bit. Get them cheeks.
Bradley Cooper was asked on some stupid fucking talk show, like Morning
Regis
One.
And Kelly.
It was a yeah. See, I was right. Like, who was his favorite on-screen kiss? Jennifer, whatever, whoever. And they were trying to get him to say a woman, and he's like, actually, probably Michael Ian Black. So he dodged the question good. And referenced. Brilliant. What a charmer that guy is. Yeah. This obviously is getting a 5, man. This movie's fucking hilarious. Every joke makes me laugh. It's weird. I might be in the few camp. I do think maybe the first day is a bit funnier. Maybe because it gets deeper into a lot more of the jokes. I love how referential it is.
Yeah.
But goddamn, this movie hits everything. It's so dense with jokes. It's another one of those, like, you can't pick a favorite. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we can, but there's just so many options. We probably all have a different favorite. How about that? I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, 5.
All right. Sean.
Kyle's like, I see your rules and fuck them. I mean, Kyle's right. There's just so many scenes in this movie that are so great. I mentioned it earlier. The whole montage scene, like, he's going through a fucking dance choreography montage that includes, like, an AA meeting. Like, all in the span of, like, 20 minutes in movie. It goes from, and I mentioned this earlier, it goes from something that's relatively tame. You know, it's the 80s, it's camp, it's a little out there, to just absolutely off the walls and back and forth, and it's just got enough of that insanity that keeps you hooked. I feel like this is the kind of movie, like, every single time that I watch it for the next 10 times, I'm going to get more out of it, considering I know for a fact there's so much that I missed on this viewing. Having not seen it, I'm paying very specific attention to this character or what's going on over here, or I'm just blindsided by something happening and I'm just out of it for 10 seconds. Like, this was so goddamn entertaining, and it is a sin that it is a crime that this did not get a chance to make more money. So this would be a 5, but it's a 4 because Ooh. Rules.
You could also pull a Kyle and just ignore him.
We have to live by rules or we're animals.
Well, it's kind of like when we did Story, we kind of ignored the everything that Ryan talked about.
Yeah.
So. I'm taking a very Andy.
The story's the only reason
episode.
It got a 3.
We all miss it. I miss music and style, and I'm so fucking glad you guys brought it up, because, like, I fucking love the soundtrack, and, like, that adds to it.
It's so good.
Well,
I've had Jefferson Starship in my head for 2 days.
Right? So, I have the...
It's been taking me higher and higher.
That one is just locked in now, and it's going to be for a while. I'll wrap up entertainment value, and I'm going to acknowledge everything that everybody said, and they're all right. I'm going to go my own path, but I do want to say, in that category, success is there, but also impact. And impact is something much more than just what the box office numbers say, right? Because not...
Retroactive 5.
Damn, I already got Sean. I don't have to finish my argument. Done. Boom. 5 out of 5. No. This has gone on to spawn 2 Netflix series that brought fucking everybody back except for Kramer and Janine Garofalo. I mean, say Kramer. Shit. What? Kramer? Why'd I go him? Niles. I can't think of the... Thank you.
David Hyde. Yeah.
That's it. Frasier. Not Kramer. Awful. Ignore everything I'm going to say because it's all wrong. But you have gone on to inspire like these Netflix series that has brought everybody back, has the fan base largely accepting and enjoying, which is something like Arrested Development hasn't been able to do widespread. It does have an impact. So I do think there's something to maybe make up for that like box office failure. In a way, I don't know. Maybe I will go with like a very reserved 5, but I do think entertainment value, there's something, I think box office should maybe help boost something up, possibly, but you can never, I don't know. It's harder to take away when something doesn't hit the box office because there's so many random variables, you know?
Right.
And this movie, I think, given a different time frame or whatever, I think it could have actually hit and done well in the box office. It was just, I think, ahead of its time. Everybody was just a little too unknown and underrated. But like, god damn, I enjoy this movie so much. And it's one I've seen so many times. I enjoy this, to counter Kyle, more than any of the Netflix series. I think this is my favorite Wet Hot brand, piece of branding. I love this movie, and I think it's a lot of fun from start to finish. Of all the parodies that this is like in the classes of, like Naked Guns and Airplanes, this is my favorite. This is hands down my favorite. So this is a 5.
Wow.
To carry on from what you were saying about like the impact and the genre, to just, I snap. Like went back and like retroactive 5, because that is part of this. And what kind of surprised me is that Sarah had never seen this prior. And nice. I like, besides myself, I don't know anybody who hadn't seen this movie. I have heard about this movie so many goddamn times. By all rights, I should have seen a clip of this. I should have seen stills of this. I should have known that it was a parody because of how many times I've heard people bring up this movie. And 2.5 decades later, like, that's not happening unless it was entertaining, regardless of how much that it may have made in the box office. So I've got to, like you said, you got to disregard that for me.
It has its cult status. Mm-hmm. And for a good reason.
My defense of Wet Hot, First Day of Camp, it has Lake Bell. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that an actress or a lake?
The voice actress. Poison Ivy. That's how...
She does a lot of voice acting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's also got a great movie that's about voice acting. Called
In a World.
It is.
It's a great movie.
It's a fantastic movie. All right, our final category is direction. I think we're going to have Kyle kick this one off.
Yeah, surprise, surprise, it's David Wayne, and in some weird language, I'm sure Wayne stands for 5, because that's what I'm giving it. no, I fucking love David Wayne. I love Michael Showalter. I love Michael Ian Black. I love all these fucking people. I love everything they do. I've seen Michael Ian Black do stand-up. That was fantastic. But yeah, they're just, I don't know, man. Like I said, it's a specific type of comedy that either, I don't want to say like pretentiously, like you either get it or you don't. It's just, it's in your wheelhouse. It's your style or it's not. I love the number one, the stupidity. It's so fucking dumb. But that's what makes it great. And just so many things like that he lets them do. Like I said, the walking up and just standing next to the wall, the purposeful continuity errors, like Elizabeth Banks, the barbecue sauce is different on her face every fucking time. I love that they lean into all of that stuff. It's just, it's all these little things that are hilarious. And you can only get that when you have, like, I don't know, I talk about these back and forth, but like, I think he obviously had full creative control in every part of this process. And it's one of the, like, it's fantastic. I love every bit of this. And I think the reason that Ryan brought up it gets two spinoff sequels is because eventually a lot of people also come to realize, oh, this is really good. So, yeah, I think this is a fucking 5 out of 5.
All right, Ryan.
I'm glad you agreed with me, Kyle, because I'm going to disagree with you and say this is a strong 4. I'm not going to give it my 5. I do think this one's a little flabby around the edges. I do think David Wayne goes on to be more accomplished in some of the things he does later on. There are some bits that just flat out don't work for me, and you know absolutely one of them is old man comedian bit. I just don't fucking get it.
He did
it
not feels like indulgent. Him.
I don't like it. It's like Scorsese showing up in that fucking movie with Leo. Get out. No one wants you right now. Get out. I don't know. A lot of this works for me. Maybe this should have been in style, and so this is where my point's gonna fall. But a lot of this is shot with a real just like lack of eye of color or anything. It's just kind of very flatly shot. And I do think, like, whatever, it's fine. It's a comedy movie. But, like, there is something to be said of, like, Edgar Wright does comedy, but also pays attention to, like, how a fucking frame looks. And so there's some of that here where I wish there was a little bit more. And I would give a 5 if there was just something popping a little bit more. So I'm all over the place in my reasoning, but I feel strongly this is a 4. I'm positive, but I can't say it's quite perfect for me yet.
Okay, that's fair. I'll go next. It is also going to be a 4 from me. I really enjoy the film as a whole, but I think there are, like Ryan said, some instances where it could have been shot better or there could have been just a little more attention paid to certain things. I know that it was raining for like 23 of the 28 days they shot it, so they had to pivot a lot. That? Bloop. Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, no, you continue because there's a pin.
For after.
And then we will remove the pin.
Oh, yeah. Putting a pin in it. Like, this is the thing I wanted to say the whole episode, so put a pin in that.
And, yeah, I mean, it's still really good, but I definitely think you see some better stuff from David Wayne afterwards with things like A Futile and Stupid Gesture and They Came Together and
Role Models. Oh,
Role Models.
Let's just say it, like Role that. Models.
Yeah. Role Models. Mm-hmm. So good. So yeah, 4. And then Sean, you can bring it home.
Speaking of Role Models, 80 Miles, seeing him here prior to him. Role Models.
Love him.
Oh, so good. All right, this is going to be a little bit weird because I did already spoil something earlier, but I also agree with you guys. I think from beginning to end, like complete vision-wise and being able to get it done in a complete package sort of way, I don't think it's a 5. I think it's 3-4. 4 at best, probably. So 4, but I'm giving it a bonus point. I am giving it a bonus point, not even to take it above 5, but to push it to 5 from the 4 that I gave it, because I firmly believe this is like a 4. But it's got to get the bonus here because, and I couldn't figure out where to do this, but it's like the perfect mashup of like the insanity of the script and the tone of the movie, and also directionally being able to do, like, you mentioned that it rained for all of that time. There are so many times in this movie where someone like Coop will just walk into a cabin and he walks in, he talks to somebody, and it cuts back to look at Coop and it's downpouring behind him. But it was sunny out when he walked in. It's sunny when he leaves. And it's just like this insane trip of a, like, this crazy motherfucker was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. We can do this because it's going to be funny. And motherfucker, you made Mother Nature funny to me, because that did pop me. So I do have to give a bonus point somewhere in here to just the complete package and being able to see that and be like, eh, doesn't matter. I love that. So, 4, 5.
Five. 4 with a bonus point.
4, 5. Yeah.
All right.
Only person ever to give something a bonus point and still just barely make it to max score.
Sometimes you need the extra credit just to get to perfect.
Yeah, it's true.
Speaking of perfect, this movie is not generally reviewed well. It got a lot of bad reviews critically. It only has a 39% critical Rotten Tomato score. Rotten Tomato, 39% critical, but 75% audience. And then on IMDb, it's a 6.5 out of 10. Metacritic has it at a 42. Letterboxd has it a 3.5 out of 5, which is higher. But we just went way above all of that and gave it a 92.
Damn right.
I don't know what that says about us, but...
Well, I think that speaks a lot to what Kyle said earlier. You either really like this, you either love this movie or you hate this movie. And
yeah,
I mean, I don't think I'm at the point where I'm like, I fucking love this movie, but I really enjoy this movie. And I'll put this on in the background if I owned it all the time.
Yeah, especially with the fart track.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sign me the fuck up. Let me
friend
find
of the Beer Me Boys, Roger Ebert, pinned his scathing review in the same style and tone as the hello mutta, hello fada, here yeah. I am at, and he his whole review was in that style, and he just did not like this movie at all. So it's very catty. It's very
there's
funny.
Something about hating something so much that you put extra effort mm-hmm. into
the hate
bad review.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. That makes me want to see it more, honestly. Right? You're going to artistically hate it? Let me see why.
What made you so mad? Yeah,
let me see how this pudding was made.
Did you I know what it pudding? Is? Roger Ebert famously loves some titties, and he probably went into this expecting to see some and didn't.
I love how they even tease you. Like, they show Elizabeth Banks, like, undoing her top for a
and
second.
And then it's back on 2 seconds
and then it's
later.
Right back
it's
on.
Just back on.
Yeah.
It's so fucking funny.
Can we go back to Roger Ebert liking titties? Is this true? Can we confirm he liked titties?
Oh, yeah. Dude's a total horn dog.
How
total
so?
Horn dog.
How do you think his jaw fell off?
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
But Sean, how?
Val Kilmer's
so one too many.
How? So much.
Please explain to me how.
Oh, you remember that scene in The Mask where the jaw just hits the table after he sees the bazoongas?
Oh, okay. That's what happened.
Oh, that's yeah, because that actually tracks.
Actually, yeah, yeah. Saw a great
you
great set
guys
of bazoongas.
Thought I was being crass.
That was a great way to pull around without going no. crass. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
He was just making a cartoon reference.
That was medical, bro. The whole tongue thing and everything just rolled right out.
Roger Ebert directed a movie called Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Yep.
Is it good? Was it critically received well? Because that would be hilarious if
it
got
banned. I don't
think
it was.
No, most people didn't like it.
Did he give his own film a 1 out of 4?
It was definitely, it was panned by critics, but I want to say it got an X rating because Roger Ebert's such a horn dog.
No way.
He made Caligula, Caligula Part 2. This time, more sex.
Caligula.
No. Not going to make that one work.
Caligulingus.
This time we show Shaft and balls.
All right. So yeah, next week, Caligula.
That would be funny if that's what it turns out to.
That is Wet Hot American Summer.
I am glad we did it.
We made it there.
I love this movie. It's a fun rewatch. I think you pick up something new each time.
I did too.
I don't want to say what I picked up because
I look forward to that.
It's gonna be dumb.
No,
Roger.
This is the watch, and I've seen this movie now dozens of times. Where I just figured out why the can is talking. I never pieced together. It's because the guy is talking to the can, and you're supposed to think like, "Oh, that guy's gonna come later and give the inspirational pep talk." But no, it's the can, and that's why that scene's there. And then the can comes to like subvert that. I never realized that's what that shot was for, and I feel like a dumb dumb.
Are you talking about AJ
Doyle or whatever that guy's name is? AA DeMaio? AA Slider?
Yeah, Gary. The pipsqueak.
Yes. Chef.
Gary.
AA Jabato.
He's like, when he talked,
AA Jabato.
You got to talk to him, but he's talking to the can. Yeah.
You got to talk to him, but he's talking to the can.
Yeah, I look forward to watching this again to just be able to relax, kind of turn my brain off from trying to follow what's going on and just enjoy all of the different things going on everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So,
100%.
Yeah.
I think they could have cut out the whole drug den scene in the city.
No.
Nah, it's my favorite. I love that bit.
I think it's really well done.
Yeah.
I didn't need it.
I love it, especially like the cocaine dealer is there with Amy Poehler and they're like, they're arguing. And then the reveal that all that has taken place within an hour.
They
rob the old lady. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Garofalo just punches her in the stomach.
I love that it starts off as like the counselors are about to smoke some weed and like they see Beth coming and they're like, oh no, hide it. And she's like, nah, give me that. And then it just goes completely off the walls.
That gateway drug boys, am I right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Hardened criminals.
I need lube for my pussy.
I was wondering who was going to say it. Because that's going to be the quote at the end of the year in the grindies for that person.
I mean, I keep getting quoted out of context anyway in the Discord, so.
I think Brian's got that category wrapped up.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, I don't know what Casey's choice is for next week, fellas. When I do, I'll let you guys know. But I think what Brian is, he's not joining us next week.
That's right. I will be in Florida.
In Florida? How does he feel about that?
He's the one who named himself after a state.
Are you sure it's not the other way around?
Mm-hmm. The state's named after Florida.
Could you imagine if Florida was that old secretly? He's just another Paul Rudd. He's a
Cthulhu
Rudd
being who's been around
Steve
forever.
Steve Martin.
He's an elder god.
Yeah. He sold the rights to his name for like three beads and a ruby.
What?
That's what they bought Florida for. They didn't buy Florida for very much because it was like swampland back in the...
When we were doing our expansion.
I mean, yeah. That's why it was so cheap.
Oh, boys, I forgot to mention, there's a tabletop role-playing Wet Hot American Summer game that was funded on Kickstarter.
Wait.
What?
What? Currently?
It was years ago, but apparently it exists out there in the world. So
I'm looking this up.
I was going to say, everybody's looking it up now.
You can play a day at camp.
But with
it's on Amazon.
Humor and parody? That's an interesting thing to tabletop RPG, it seems.
Your friend's got
to
be
funny. Yeah, I would like to see how that works.
Are you? Oh, shit.
Lucky for us.
I was going to say, so none of us can play.
Right.
Sorry, guys.
Are you looking at fantasy camp?
Yeah.
Roll the dice, hump the fridge, save the camp.
Yeah.
There is some fridge humping.
Save the cheerleader, save the world. Something like that.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I'm here. Enjoy new material from Wet Hot American Summer cast members Jola Truglio, Maurice Moreau, Michael Ian Black, and David Wayne. Well, there you have it, folks. If you want to buy this for us.
Don't. Save your money.
My Amazon wish list is. Don't. My address is. P.O. Box. Oh.
Yep. Definitely getting one of those and not shouting that out.
What's Six Sickly's address? Say it real quick. I know somebody remembers it.
Ooh. 60652.
692.
No, that's Scruff McGruff, Chicago,
New York, New York.
652.
Yeah, I can only remember Zoom.
Six. Oh, wait, what is Zoom?
Do you know what it is, Ryan? Or are you just trying to troll?
No, because somebody always knows it. I reference Six Sickly and somebody starts singing the fucking post office song. So I figure if somebody knows Six Sickly, they just have it locked in. I don't remember shit. Goes, my brain's addled as fuck.
New York, New York.
I think I'm like now. 1 year too young to remember.
Yeah.
Maybe. Six Sickly was awesome, man. How stupid. Yeah. It's a fucking popsicle
brilliant
stick.
Is what it is. It's so fucking brilliant. It's like Siffle and Ollie. Eyes.
It's so fucking
simplicity.
Siffle and Ollie.
Simplicity works.
Lasted for way too long.
P.O. Box 963, New York City, New York State, 1018. Something like that.
That's 1018.
That can't be the melody. 1018. That can't
be the
melody.
It feels like they're just trying to do that's ZLM Box 350, Boston, Mass.
0-2-1-3-4-8.
See, we're going to do this bit again. Let's just do this every single week, and eventually I'm just going to like sneak in a P.O. box and be like,
an actual P.O. box.
This is a real one? Nice.
I dig it.
Okay, so typically it would be Ryan's pick next week, but you have Casey's coming up and visiting you, and Casey's going to be picking something, slash if he doesn't, Ryan will surprise us with something. Is that the dealio?
Yeah, I think he's got that in the back.
I will
pocket
say, if Casey like, hey. Does not pick something, you will suffer because it is not a fun pick. I feel like we've had too many good movies, and I chose a real fucking cat's turd.
Okay. Why are you being a fan?
Right.
I was going to say, I hope he picks because that I was very excited because it changes things up. If Casey picks, I get to pick an action movie.
Oh,
and I was. Very
does
excited.
Shift everything, doesn't it?
So I'm pushing him to pick now.
Do it.
We're like, hey, fucking do it. So yeah, we'll see what he does. Very excited,
Man.
And we will miss you, of course, Brian. But just like last week when Ryan was out, we had Dave step in for the Pee Wee Ep. That's the beauty of this thing. We
next
keep rolling,
we have
baby.
Pee Wee himself.
Yeah,
now
that would be wild.
It's gonna be awkward.
That'd be nuts. Fucking fire. It'd be nothing.
I
but
kept wanting to do an impression
of
like of
Paul Rubens,
late stage.
No,
Roger Ebert, but it felt what? To me.
Wait, you're gonna do late stage Roger Ebert through the impression of Pee Wee?
No, just Roger.
There's much. Oh.
I was just gonna be like,
whatever Sean was doing with his face felt more like Dana Carvey in Master of Illusions or whatever that Master of Disguise.
I got Ryan real good.
Turtle. I think it broke Ryan, but somebody did.
I hope it was my flawless Roger Ebert impression.
Oh, Jesus. This got Dark. Yeah. Sean, yeah, I did. Where can the people find us?
Head on over. If you guys know how to use Linktree/experiencegrind, all of our stuff's on there. Join us on Patreon for bonus episodes, and that's where you can support us. Also, our Discord link. Come join us there. But until next week, when somebody has an episode about something, whether it's good or torture, Brian, why don't you take us out?
Yeah, we love you guys. Thanks for joining us, and go gurnal yourself.